so many of our expectations, here's what I found. We don't even realize we have them until they went unmet and until we're disappointed. And so I think if we can reverse engineer that, say, I don't want to be disappointed in my spouse and I don't want to disappoint my spouse. And so we have this vacation coming up or this event coming up or this new season of life with a child or a job change or a move or whatever it is, that as much as you can stop at the beginning of that and have an honest conversation with yourself first and foremost to say, what are my expectations out of this? I just do believe there is a reward that is on the other side of that, that is so inexplicable and hard to explain and understand. And I think that sometimes if people could just see that and know that and have that in mind, then those differences and those compromises and all the other things that we've talked about, it can be so worth it when you have this relationship that truly is mystical and magical and supernatural.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, welcome everybody. It is so good to be with you today. And man, before we get started with our conversation, I want to encourage you to rate and review Made to Advance. That helps us get the word out to more and more people about the pod. And it helps us bring on more incredible guests like the one we have today. I'm so excited because today I have with me Chelsea Smith, who is the author of the new book, I Do Today, a 52-week guide to the marriage you've been waiting for. Chelsea also leads Church Home with her husband, Judah. And I am excited for this conversation, both because Chelsea and Judah have a long, fruitful marriage that we can learn from, and also because Chelsea's new book is so accessible and helpful for any married couple. I read it. I loved it. I can't wait for you to learn more about it today and hopefully buy it. Chelsea, welcome to the show.
I am so excited to be here, Pastor Brian, and I love the work they do. When I heard about the show, I went on and Instagram stalked you and website stalked you. And I'll be honest, I saw that you have a job for a discipleship pastor available, and your church looks so amazing. I was like, gosh, maybe I could apply for that job. That looks really amazing. So it just seems like you're doing such a great work with an incredible staff and team, and I am so excited to have this conversation with you. So thank you for having me on.
Hey, we'll keep that job opening for you. Okay. I recall that maybe you've got your master's from Fuller. Is that right? Is that what I'm remembering?
Well, truthfully, I'm one class away, so I'm almost there, but it's been such a wonderful journey. So I feel like I'm equipped.
What's your degree in or going to
theology? Theology, just a master's of arts in theology. I didn't do the MDiv because my one Greek class, I was like, yeah, I'm good. I got the basics. So just teach me how to use the software. So.
Yeah, I honestly think that's a great approach. And anybody who's a total, purist when it comes to pastoral level education will be like, no, the MDiv. But a master's of theology, I think, is such a great program for maybe even most people, and partially, like you said, because software is so good, if you can learn some of the basics around Greek and Hebrew, it's the software is just super, super helpful. There's no getting around it. So good for you, though. That's awesome.
It's been really fun. I've loved it. And you are from, where did you graduate?
I graduated from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Chicagoland, which the difference between my school and yours is that yours still exists. So mine just, Trinity was like one of the big time seminaries of the United States. And then there's been a lot of course, contraction in higher education and particularly in Christian ed. And so, I mean, in fairness, my seminary, they kind of merged with a Canadian school, and I don't know exactly how all that works, but it's a bummer. One of our pastors graduated from my Trinity in the very last class that was on campus. So it was a weird thing because I'm there and, you know, you're having this exciting graduation, but it's also like a funeral at the same time. So anyway, but I'm grateful for a good education.
That's amazing. Those Canadians, let me tell you, I'm a Mariners fan to my core, and the Blue Jays just beat out the Mariners in Game 7 on their way to the World Series. So I don't understand, you know, letting Canadians into baseball, but I'm sure I just offended half of your audience with that statement.
You're beefing with the Canadians. I mean, that's a bold move. So, well, I'm excited to talk about marriage. It's such a subject that is just, you know, whether even somebody who's in singleness right now, it's such a great conversation of what does it mean to build towards a healthy marriage. And I was thinking about, and we're going to get into some different topics that you really explicitly cover in your book, but similar to you, Christina and I have been in ministry leadership for a long, long time and have had lots of conversations with couples on all different kinds of subjects. I'd be curious, from your long background in pastoral ministry, what would you say is the single greatest kind of topic that couples might bring to you for, here's a challenge we're facing or a question we're asking? And if you can't narrow it down to the top one, maybe the, you know, top couple or whatever, any themes come to mind?
Yeah, such a great question. And it is amazing what ministry perspective does give us. Like, we're there with couples when they get married or when they unfortunately sign divorce papers, or sitting with couples when one tells their, it's just all of the scope and journey that we get to do with life. I would say that people come out of money or cheating or just a low level dissatisfaction with their marriage. But if I had to boil it down to two things, Brian, I would say it comes down to either a lack of contentment in your own life, either who you are, what you have, where you're at in life that you are projecting into your marriage, or living a life of unforgiveness and resentment and bitterness, and not even necessarily towards your spouse, but holding on to that towards others, it is going to bleed into your marriage. And so if I was to boil all of the peripheral down to, such a great question, by the way, haven't been asked that one yet, down to the two heart issues, I would say lack of contentment and bitterness and unforgiveness creeping into our hearts, that fixing those really would fix 80% of the marriage pain that we tend to see. I don't know. What do you think?
I it's funny because I haven't thought about that for me, so I'd have to ponder right. it a little bit longer before I would be ready to answer it. But I'll see if I can come up with a good answer. Here's a question from when you're talking with couples. Then I love what you're saying. What you're saying is, hey, they might come to me with a symptom of an issue up here. But my guess is then if you're what you're suggesting is, hey, whether it be contentment or forgiveness issues, you've got to do some digging to get to what's at the root. How, I mean, talk to me about how, like, if you're sitting down with a couple and maybe somebody who's listening right now might be doing a little bit of like self-analysis, how do you get to discerning what the root is? I mean, how are you figuring that out? Somebody comes to you and they say, oh my gosh, we're, you know, dealing with money issues, or we're dealing with intimacy problems or whatever. How do you get to the place where you're having a conversation that's a different conversation than the one they came to you or they thought they came to you for?
Right. That's such a great point. And I think the reason I wrote this book the way I did, by the way, is to try to get down to the root of the problem in that way. Truthfully, so the book is 52 weeks, and each week is a pretty, thank you for saying it's accessible. It's a pretty accessible topic of money or in-laws, or, you know, there's a few that are hard hitters as they are. But the reason I wanted to take 52 weeks, to be honest, the publisher said, hey, we'll give you more money if you'll just write a trade book, you know, just write a book on marriage that anybody can sit down and read in a month. But I was like, no, my goal for this isn't to just deal with the topics and give somebody a thought and move on. It really is to dig into those heart issues and for couples to do it together through meaningful conversations they have. And so I would say that the best way in sitting down with people and couples is by asking questions. You're obviously so good at this on your podcast, but the question, so why do you think you bought that? You know, if they come in for money and they've gone into debt and one isn't uncomfortable with their spending, the other, well, why do you think you bought that new car that you didn't need and your wife thought that you couldn't afford? Well, you start to begin to ask some questions and uncover that, man, there's a lack of contentment and I'm feeling like I'm not enough. So I have to compensate for it with this car or with this, you know, whatever the thing is. And so I think the power of questions is so wonderful and beautiful in getting people to talk and uncover that themselves. Because I don't know about you, but for me, it's not helpful to sit around and somebody says, well, you know, Chelsea, I think the issue that you're really bringing here is unforgiveness. Like, no, right. I want to come up with that on my own, and maybe I'm a little stubborn or a little prideful in that, and maybe that should be a third issue. But there is a power in questions and helping us to see that for ourselves and with our spouse and with the power of the Holy Spirit to help us to uncover those things. And I think that is why questions are just one of the most powerful things that we can participate in on this planet, to uncover those really the heart root issues that can really bring about deep, real change, instead of just, oh, okay, now we have a budget figured out, we're going to be good. No, because if that heart issue of discontentment is still there and still gnawing and still a driving force and factor in and how you're handling money, your budget's not going to solve that problem.
Yeah, that is so, so good. And that's where one of the many ways that our spouses can be such a gift to us is if they know how to just ask good questions. I think you're totally right. And it's regardless of what's behind it, the moment, if you're the spouse that sees your significant other has an issue and you are trying to just straight up name it with them, it can oftentimes feel like an accusation or attack, and it puts me on the defensive. You're telling me, here's your issue. Now, is there a place for that at times? Sure, there's probably a place at times to say, you know, just name something. But if you can do it like you're saying, by asking those questions, intelligent questions that are a little bit leading, but help them process at a deeper level, that's such a gift to your spouse. And for each of us individually to ask those same questions, to try to say, what is really going on here? Why did I do that? Let me jump in.
Oh, can I jump on what you said? Because what you said is so brilliant, asking questions. I want to take that a step further. And it's not just asking questions. It's asking them when you are not already in an emotionally charged situation. I feel like, I mean, maybe there's spouses out there that are better than me, but typically I'm not going to ask you to those deep questions unless I'm already annoyed, I'm already bothered, I'm already, there's already something going on that is leading me to those questions. And that's already going to put me on the offensive and him on the defensive. And it's not necessarily going to get to where it could go if those questions could be asked when we actually, there's nothing emotionally charged about it. We're sitting there on a Tuesday evening, happy with each other, drinking our coffee, and those questions get to come up without that emotionally charged thing that would normally lead to those questions being asked. I don't know. Yeah, you guys are probably better than good. We are. I feel like you can have those conversations on your own. But
hands down, it's like, hey, let's try to figure out a good place. And it's not even just when we're in conflict. If we're busy, if there are external circumstances that are going to make it harder to have a productive conversation of any kind, then we just, you know, we try to figure out what's a better time. Do you like, so for me, I mean, if I knew I need to press in on something, I'm mentally thinking either A, when is the time naturally, or B, sometimes I'll say to Christina, hey, I've got something I feel like I need to process a little bit. And we'll sort of, we don't have to be as intentional about this as we used to, but, you know, almost say like, when would be a good time? Back to the questions things, when would be a good time for you? Have you ever done that where you almost like, I don't say set an appointment, but you kind of dedicate some time of like, we're going to go there at that time?
Yes. And unfortunately, we absolutely learned that the hard way. In fact, I tell a story about last summer. Jude and I are driving to church. He's about to preach. I know this is the worst time to bring up something. He's got so much on his mind. But I was so like that, you know, something came up and it just came out. And even though I knew better, it came out. And you're right. So unfortunately, we've learned that the hard way is the wrong time. And how timing can make all the difference. I use the analogy of green bananas.
It's a great analogy. Yeah.
Have you ever like just been so hungry for a banana that you like peel it open anyway and think, it's probably going to be okay. And have you ever done that? And your teeth squeak?
It's disgusting.
The banana just, and it's wild because it's the exact same thing as a perfectly ripe banana, but the difference is timing. And if we can learn that timing difference and learn the hard way from me, it's not worth it. You're not going to go where you want to go if you're in a charged situation with bad timing already. And whether that relates to conversations in marriage or conversations with your roommates or conversations with your boss, I think that can apply in many different relationships that we have. But I love what you said about setting a time to do it, because what that does for me is relieve the pressure. It's like, hey, if on that drive to church with you, I could have said, hey, there's been some things that I just, when we're calm, can we sit down and talk about them maybe sometime this week? And he says, yes, that is a little bit of a pressure release for me that I know, okay, we're going to get to it. Just not right now. Yeah. And then he knows it's on his radar and the conversation can go so much better, so much further, and actually get us where we both want to go, which is in unity, in intimacy, having fun, loving each other. We both want to get there, but that timing can sure make a difference in how long it takes to get there.
Yeah, and I love what you said, Chelsea. It's so good for anybody listening. We're going to be talking about marriage especially today, but so many relational principles cross apply to so many other relationships. So as you're listening, everyone, just keep in mind, yes, the kind of the main focus is the marriage relationship, but a lot of this will apply to other areas of your life. Now, I will say the next question I want to ask absolutely primarily and only applies to marririage. So the book is so great because I love at the end of every chapter, they're as you already explained, they're broken up by weeks. There's always something to discuss. And basically I'm going to mess the heading up, but something to take action on or something to do. And yep. So it's so good because you can have a really great conversation with your spouse about the content. And then, and by the way, for those who aren't readers out there, as Chelsea already said, it's not such long content. If you're not a reader, it's very accessible and great length for leading into a really productive conversation and then some action steps. But I'll tell you, maybe I shouldn't have been surprised when I opened up and the first, I'm guessing somebody else has asked this question and the very first chapter is on sex. And I was like, wow, hello. That's how we're starting this thing. I've read a fair number of marriage books. I don't think anybody ever starts there. And I have to ask why there?
Because absolutely my target demographic was husbands, because I understand how I believe that husbands want good marriage just as much as wives do. But sometimes getting into a work or a project or a book can feel a little more intimidating. And I realize this is gender stereotyped and it's not all this way. Sure. And I had this conversation with my publisher so many times. Hey, no, if we start with sex, we're going to get husbands involved and get them to like, oh, okay, I can get on board with this for you. So that is point one. Thank you. You are my target demographic. Thank you for taking notice. But I also really do believe, and this is a layer down further, that sex is God's gift to marriage. And sometimes as Christians, sometimes as people who are followers of Jesus, I don't think we celebrate this enough, that sex really can just be this incredible. And the title of the chapter of that one is A Little White Pill. And I use the analogy of, I love natural medicine, that, you know, those people who are so smart, they take essential oils and they do things to, you know, really holistically heal and get better and get natural at health. I love that. But sometimes when my head hurts, I just want to take an Advil and I want the headache to go away immediately. Yeah. And I do think sex can be that for our marriage, for our relationships. It can be that little white pill. It is God's gift. And the oxytocin that is released, the intimacy that can be restored, all of those things really are a gift to marriage. And I do feel like sometimes in marriage, we get into this game of chicken. And we've seen this with couples. I'm sure you've seen it as well, that there's like this old-fashioned Western standoff between a husband and wife. It's like, well, I will get intimate with you sexually when you're intimate with me emotionally. Then I'll get intimately, you know, and they're both in this standoff where sometimes if you just dive in and have sex and make that connection and that commitment that is God's gift to your marriage, it really can let all the other chapters and all the other topics that we're working on go through easier. So thank you for noticing that. You actually are the first person who has asked it in that way. So I'm glad that it caught you off guard.
Well, it's funny because, you know, one does not want, as you said, to gender stereotype, but I thought I would not be as shocked if it was a dude writing this book who said, you know what? What do we need to talk about? I know, let's start with sex. But when it's a female writer, again, I'm stereotypes and sorry, but you know, I'm thinking that feels less like the common. But now what we have here is a very smart female writer who's like trying to get the guys to engage in the book. So I love that. Which tell me the backstory behind the book. And I feel like I heard something about some social media posts that you were doing that really was the genesis of the book. Tell me the backstory.
Yeah, I love it. Years ago, one of our closest family friends ended up, we did their wedding. It was a beautiful wedding. They stood there and said, I do to each other and envisioned this life together. And then 3 years later, we were sitting down with them signing divorce papers. And what was wild for me was that the reason for this divorce, that there was no infidelity, there was no debt, there was no financial misconduct. It was just a lot of little everyday things that led to a place where they thought, we don't think we can make this marriage work for us anymore.
Wow.
And that grieved me to such an extent, because for me, marriage has been the hardest, most fulfilling thing I have done in my life. Like when all is said and done, when Jude and I hit an anniversary every year, I'm so proud of that. And it's been so much work, but the most joy I get from anything in this life, other than my relationship with Jesus, but if I'm being honest, they're pretty close up there, is my marriage and is my relationship with Judah. And so when that happened with our friends and we're signing those divorce papers together, it just made me so mad. And I thought, and this is probably super cheesy and a little charismatic, but okay, like, okay, how am I going to get back at the devil for attacking this marriage of this couple that I love? And it was, let's put some good and some good thoughts that are everyday tools that people can use for marriage to help them this week. And so that started at just a Marriage Monday post that for me, it was going to last a year. And I think it's still going on about 9 years later now that I'm still just writing one thought, because so often we hear all these big thoughts and concepts that are wonderful, but they're a little hard to enact today. Mm-hmm. And so these are just thoughts about what can I do different today and this week to make my marriage just a little bit better this week and then a little bit better next week, to give couples that incredible joy that should be our most rewarding relationship, even though it is still the hardest.
Man, that's such a cool way to redeem just a really unspeakable tragedy, to really ask, okay, how do I come alongside couples? I love that. I'm curious, having now posted probably too many to count, are there any posts that just went bananas when it came to like the virality of the post, where you're like, oh my gosh, you know, this just went crazy, and did it surprise, and did they surprise you, or were you like, yeah, this is one I would have thought would have, you know, gone crazy?
Yeah, truly the sex posts were the ones that went the most bananas, okay, which is why also starting with sex was seemed like a no-brainer for me. And I do think it's people hearing, what, you guys have been married for 20 plus years and you're still talking about sex? Like, that isn't the narrative that our society gives, right? I feel like our society gives a narrative of that marriage is the deathbed to sex, which I don't believe has to be true. And so those have been the ones that have gotten the most, I think, surprise.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I did a series not long ago where I was dealing with a bunch of kind of either A, somewhat controversial, or B, just really strong felt need kind of concepts. And hands down, the sex message is the one that got the most. It made me think I really need to do a whole series here, because who knows what would happen. It's interesting when I think about kind of that intimacy conversation. There is all of this perception in the culture of, you know, oh, it's really exciting to not be tied down, and this whole narrative out there. And then even once you are married, this idea of it would seem like it would get stale or whatever. And you've probably heard this, but I love saying it as many times in as many places as I can, that all of the research, for those who are listening, all of the research done on sexual satisfaction in relationships says not only that married couples are the most sexually satisfied, but Christian evangelical couples report the highest amount of sexual satisfaction of literally any couples in the country. So I'm just saying, follow Jesus, love your spouse, and sex gets better the longer you're intentional about it. Which, side note, Chelsea's got some great writing on in the book. You want to comment any more on that, Chelsea, before I switch?
I was just going to say, you know, we're also raising, well, young adults and teenagers now, and just for, you know, any parents out there, that has been the sex conversation that we've had with our kids, as far as, hey, God has a plan for sex and it is a marriage. And the reason we want to follow it and stick to it is it's your best chance for sexual fulfillment out there. Like, it's not the fear and gloom and doom out there. And it is exactly what you said. And please say that a million times over. I'm actually really curious. I want to read your research on that, but it is, it's the best chance of sexual fulfillment. And that's what we've told our kids. And that was our big sex talk with them.
After we get off the pod, I'll find the citation and I'll send it your way. So let's bringing up kids is a great transition point. When it comes to you and I are both on the side of, now our kids are 18, 20. Oh man, right here on the pod, I'm choking right now. 18, 22, 24. There we go. 18, 22, 24. And you guys are probably not quite there, but you're definitely not in the little kid stage anymore. And I think that the demands of the season when you have younger kids, it is a push when you've got all of that need surrounding you all the time. I would be curious, for those who are on the front end of the parenting and in some ways marriage journey, any advice you would have for keeping your marriage vibrant in the times where your circumstances are just so demanding?
Yeah, that is such a good question. And truly, Judah and I were married for 5 years before we had kids, almost five. So our kids are 21, 19, and 16. So I think we're just about two years behind you. I want to ask you so many questions, maybe for another time. And I will say, when we had our first son, that was the hardest season of our marriage up until that point. And for me, especially as a mom, it was learning how to navigate the physical demands of motherhood, of recovering from pregnancy, nursing a son, a little sleep deprived, dealing with the emotions and the hormones, and Judah's going back to work and kind of living his normal life. I'm on maternity leave, and I'm just feeling like my life has got turned upside down. And here you're expecting a happier wife who is now a mom, and just for me to be all the things that I have been. And I'm struggling in this. And I realize that's not everybody's story. I mean, a lot of people, you add postpartum to that and all of the journey. It is an extremely difficult season. And so my first advice would say, hey, I think you're doing better than you think you are. You can let go of some expectations that this season of new parenting is going to be like previous seasons were. But if you can begin to give yourself a hope that if we get through this season, put some things in place, get some parameters set, our marriage is going to be even stronger and better because we are in this season of young kids. And I do think the number one parameter that is so important for parents to put in place is to recognize that the most important gift you can give your kids is your marriage.
Let's go.
Thank you for the clap. Way more than the soccer lessons you want to give them or the piano lessons, or way more than the devoted time that you think your kids need from you. Giving your kids a gift of your marriage is the best thing you can give them for their mental health, their psychological well-being, all of the things that are provided to children because of a healthy marriage is the number one thing you can give them. I was really grateful. My parents just celebrated their 56th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
And they still go on dates every Friday night, which is wild because nobody lives at home with them. But yeah. Friday night, still date night for them. My dad loves to travel. And so when my sister and I were growing up, my parents were raising us. I saw my parents do date night every Friday night and go on vacation. They probably left us twice a year for a week at a time. And for me to be on the receiving end of that, and I missed my parents when they did those things, but it didn't harm me. It didn't scar me. And I actually can look back and see how grateful I am that my parents did that. When I hear couples who are hesitant to do a date night, hesitant to get a babysitter, hesitant to leave their kids, I want to lovingly say, oh, prioritize your marriage. That is actually the best gift you can give your kids. So you clapped on that. So you feel the same way in ministry and pastoring and seeing all the things?
Just 100%. And I'm so glad that you just said everything you said. I'd give a great big amen, double click, whatever it takes. I literally just came from a lunch meeting with a couple right before this. And we were talking about what's the state of their life and marriage and whatnot. And both are working full time, and the husband in particular has an extremely demanding job. And I was asking, what are their and this season now through the end of the year is the most demanding part of the season. Wow. Works for a company that does a lot of business right now. And I said to them, what are your rhythms for recovering as a couple and as a family from a season like this? And they said, well, we used to do, you know, like he said, typically we've done vacations afterwards as a family. And although this year we don't have one on the books. And I said, now you might disagree with me, although I think you'll agree. I said, listen, I would prioritize having time where the two of you go away, ideally for two nights, at least one, but ideally two nights. And I would literally put that ahead of a family vacation because the kids are going to be fine, vacation or no vacation. Yes, is it nice memories? Yes, all that, fine. But the best thing you can give them is a healthy, vibrant marriage in the home. And that's not going to come unless the two of you get away. So that was my two cents. What do you say? Am I right or wrong on that? If you had to choose one or the other, what are you going to do?
1,000% the investing into the marriage. And here's the thing. We have spent so much time and money taking our kids on vacations that they actually don't even remember, especially when they're that age. And I don't know if you feel this way. I found it was easiest to leave the kids when they were younger. For us, the middle school years were probably the years that we scaled back a little bit to make sure that we were there for our kids because so much in identity formation is happening over those years. But the kids don't even remember at that age. They're going to be fine. Yeah. And making that financial priority and time priority, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I just, we don't want to say, and I know sometimes people will say, well, you make it sound like date nights and a couple of getaways, which, by the way, we shoot for the same, at least I just told this couple, actually. We said we used to do one getaway a year, and we shoot for now two, for just Christina and me. And, but, you know, sometimes couples want to say, well, you almost make it sound like date nights and getaways will solve all your marriage problems. And I'm like, they won't solve all of them, but you'll be shocked at what happens if you can prioritize that time of just connecting. Yeah. You talk in the book about just the whole importance of expectations and how often mis-expectations or differing expectations can be a source of conflict. And I just think that's so true. Husbands come in with a certain picture and of if this is what it's going to be like, and wives have their picture, and then they do this or they go that way, and it's a challenge. What advice do you have for a couple that's trying to get on the same page when it comes to their expectations for each other and for their marriage?
Oh, I thank you for bringing this up. I do think it is one of the most important topics, because on the backside of missed expectations is disappointment. And for me, there is almost nothing worse than feeling like I disappointed Judah. And when he feels like he disappointed me, it is just, it's a tough pill to swallow. And so many of our expectations, here's what I found, we don't even realize we have them until they went unmet and until we're disappointed. And so I think if we can reverse engineer that and say, I don't want to be disappointed in my spouse, and I don't want to disappoint my spouse. And so we have this vacation coming up, or this event coming up, or this new season of life with a child, or a job change, or a move, or whatever it is, that as much as you can stop at the beginning of that and have an honest conversation with yourself first and foremost to say, what are my expectations out of this? What am I expecting out of this move that we're about to make? Am I expecting that we are going to be in a new city, and so we're going to make some new couple friends together? Am I expecting that you're going to get a new job, and so that's going to free up our finance? Am I expecting that you're changing your job, so I'm going to get more? Whatever those things are, so often we don't know what they are. And so taking doing the work, take time with ourselves, with Jesus, with, you know, maybe a journal and some Holy Spirit activity to identify what our expectations are in that moment. But then here's the next key, not just to identify them, to then actually go voice them to our spouse in a non-controlling, non-demanding, non-manipulative way to say, hey, I'm not demanding these things of you, and I'm not trying to control the outcome, and I'm not trying to manipulate you into this outcome. But I have realized that what I am hoping for, what my expectations are out of this is A, B, and C. And then letting that be a conversation for your spouse to say, oh, well, that's interesting because my expectations were this. And then as much as we can align and adjust our expectations before the thing, it sets us up for being on the same page and not being disappointed and not disappointing our spouses and having the guts to have that conversation beforehand. Have you guys ever done that? Noticed
yeah,
a pattern?
I think you're right. I mean, I love the idea of what you're saying of really being intentional about making it a discipline, almost like a discipline. I know we don't necessarily love that word, but making it a discipline or a practice to say, let's think and intentionally communicate expectations. I think here we are. We're now married for 28 years and just have loved marriage. I mean, we're best friends. We love hanging out, and our marriage is our relationship is as great as it's ever been. And that being said, literally, I don't know if it was last Friday or the previous Friday, Christina, because the way we do church schedule is Friday and Saturday are our days off here. And so she had one picture for how that Friday was going to go. I had another picture, and all of a sudden, I don't know, you know, midday or so, we cross paths in the kitchen, and I can just tell something's off, and I'm not sure what it is, and she's not saying anything. And so I said, hey, I'm feeling some weird energy here. What's going on? And she finally just said, you know, I guess I thought that you weren't going to be working all day today. and I was thinking, well, I feel like I haven't worked all day, but we did do coffee and all that this morning. But at the end of the day, what's the issue? Missed expectations. And I thought one thing she didn't, and what you're getting at is exactly the root of it. We just didn't communicate about it. And if we would have, then I think we could have come up with a very win-win kind of plan between the two of us. But even on a pedestrian thing, like just how's the Friday going to go? That was a marriage issue. We got set back And it would have been so, we literally every Friday, we start every Friday driving for like half an hour to an hour, getting coffee. We get a scone at a certain place and we just talk. And how easy it would have been just to say, hey, what are our expectations for today? And that would have like cleared the whole thing up, and we didn't. So yeah. I love that. I love that.
If you could have just said, hey, I've got a couple work projects to do when I get back. I think I'm just going to tweak a couple things. How's that? Yep. It would have been so much easier than the energy in the kitchen.
Yeah. Then we got to do conflict resolution. So
also, but 28 years of marriage, good on you. But for saying, hey, I feel some weird energy, and just talking about it and talking through it. That is always going to happen. And knowing
that's
those.
It. Yeah. One of the things that you talk about in the book that I really appreciate, and you have a Jerry Maguire reference in there, which it's not maybe for everybody, but that is such a legendary movie for its era. And I want to make Jerry Maguire references at times, and I'm so sad when people have not seen the movie to know the reference. So
it's our age. It's at the late 90s era.
Yeah. So there is a great scene where, you know, the couples say that they complete each other in an elevator. I think it's in an elevator, if I recall. I think they might be signing to each other or something like that. But anyway, and you talk about in the book why this whole notion of one person completing another is actually kind of a mistaken idea. And I'd love for you to expand on that. I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly, but I'd love for you to expand on why that's the case.
Yeah, I think that also ties in with expectations that if we go into marriage and into this relationship, that this one person is going to be my everything, and obviously they're the only person meeting my sexual needs, but other than that, meeting my emotional needs and my spiritual needs, if I'm expecting my husband to be the only person who is going to meet those needs, because I have this view, this romanticized notion of marriage and love, that this person is my everything, I am setting myself up to just be disappointed in Judah, in my spouse, and they're never going to do that. No human can ever do that for another human. I believe that we are God designed to not just need our spouse, but also first and foremost to need God, to have our own personal relationship with Him. Even those things we talked about with contentment and unforgiveness. And I do believe a lot of those things can be worked out. Some of that is my work to work out between me and God, and for God to have those insights into me. Chelsea, you're not being content. You're not feeling like you're enough. Hey, you need to let go of this. And some of those things are God's job to do for me and not my spouse's job to do for me. But the whole nother layer of what we need in life is friends and community. And there are times when I just... middle age for women is no joke. I'll just throw it out there. I'm like, I don't know if your wife feels this way, but I'm like, God, I don't understand this design that you have for us, that I'm dealing with empty nest, aging parents, and menopause all at the same time. Come on, God, let's deal something with this. And I can try to make that joke with you. I can try to make that joke with Judah. You're not going to get it on the same level as me calling up a girlfriend and just being able to joke and lament. And she is going to feed me and fill me in a way that is going to help me come home and be better with Judah instead of trying to get something from him that he wasn't designed to give me. And if we can have fulfillment in our relationship with God and in our friendship with other people, it is just going to enhance and add to our marriage and set our expectations up. And same for Judah with having those guy friends that he can just really talk to and open up his heart and have that soul-bearing relationship, not just with me. Because there are certain things that Judah will try to bring to me sometimes, Pastor Brian, that I can't carry. I can't handle. It feels like too much. And this has been a tough thing for me to be able to say to him, Judah, I love you so much. I care about that, but I can't carry that alone with you. Who else can help you to carry that, help us to carry that so that we're not carrying it alone? And that's been a challenge, but it has brought so much life to our marriage and our relationship to adjust those expectations.
Yeah, that's so good. I love too that, I mean, that, you know, it goes without saying that our relationship with God has to do with everything about how we process marriage and our kind of getting whole on the inside. But I love your emphasis on having friendships outside of just your spouse that you're really able to process those things with as well. That's so good. I when I think of of personality types and what often causes friction in relationships. And you know, it's still to this day, it's funny, Christine and I are very different. There are ways we're very similar. There are ways we're very different as well. And still to this day, some of our differences that really do make us better as a couple and as a marital unit and then our family as a whole can still, you know, be an issue at times. So this whole issue of differences, I guess, talk to me about how you manage when your spouse is different than you. And I don't know, I see young couples and at first they're like, oh, I just love how extroverted he is, or oh, I just love how this. And then all of a sudden you get married and whatever the thing was that seemed super cool is like, wow, you are so annoying. And we know they're not really terrible or anything, but how do you manage the differences in a way that's life-giving?
Such a good question, because I do feel like Judah and I, at the end of the day, we're still having the same fights that we had 25 years ago, yeah. Which is I want quality time, and he went, and those, a lot of those things don't actually change over the course of marriage. Yeah. And when I sit back and think about it, I find a beauty and a benefit to that in the sense of, okay, you know what? We haven't changed each other, because you're right. So much of what I fell in love with Judah when we're dating and it's the late 90s and we're in our early 20s is he is just this fun, spontaneous human being. And I can be a little serious sometimes, and I connect with Judah and he just wants to laugh and sing songs and dance and have fun. And I literally fell in love with him because of that. I can go back to moments where I was watching him just be this fun, spontaneous person and just smile and think that is moments where I fell in love with him. Fast forward 10 years later, we're into marriage and I am so frustrated. This is the first time we actually went to marriage counseling was over this, because he's wanting our life to grow and be between two cities. And all I want is this routine and this consistent life that I can count on. And I'll never forget when Leslie, the female marriage counselor we were seeing, sat and looked at me and her beautiful blue eyes, she just looked at me and said, you know, Judah is this spontaneous human that you fell in love with. Are you wanting him to be something different now? And that just in her kind way just took me aback to realize, why would I want to change the very thing I fell in love with Judah over? And wow. I realized why. Because it makes me uncomfortable. And he wants to be spontaneous and I want to be routine. And that means I'm not getting what I want when I want it. And that comes to this place of I have to compromise at times, and he has to compromise with me. And I know we don't always love that word in marriage, but I think one of the things that can really help us when it comes to differences, my mother-in-law has this saying that she told me from the very beginning of when Judah and I started dating. And she would say, you know what? Great strengths come with compensating great weaknesses. And when I think about Judah, I can see that he has this incredible strength of generosity. He will give you the shirt off of his back, the clothes off of our refrigerator. He will give away everything he has. And I saw this.
You said clothes off of your refrigerator. I think you meant food out of your refrigerator. Just for the listening audience. I don't think the Smiths keep their clothes in or on the refrigerator. So anyway. But I'm sorry to interrupt. Just thought I'd clarify that.
Remember back when we had nudie jeans? Did you ever do those? And they told you to wash them by putting them in the freezer?
No.
Do you remember that?
You're in a whole different realm than me right now, but yes. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, the trend ticket. By the way, I never did get that, but yes, I did have to say the clothes off of your back or the food out of your refrigerator.
Yeah.
Judah is that incredibly generous person, and I love that about him, and that is a strength that he has. But it comes with a weakness that he's not the best at sticking to a budget. And we have gotten in so many discussions over the years and I'm trying to make him be this great budgeter. And yet I really want him to be this generous person that he is. And I think if we can recognize, first of all, what the difference is in our spouse, is that first of all, I fell in love with this about you. And I chose you knowing that this is who you are. And that's where so much of the I do today comes in, is I'm saying I do to everything that you are today without having to change you just because it's making me uncomfortable, or I'm having to do some things that I don't want to do. And hopefully that goes both ways in a marriage. But the second thing is recognizing these things that I'm not that I'm annoyed at with you, when I think about the flip side of those, it actually is what I love about you. And I get to accept all of you. I don't get to just pick and choose what I like about you and what I want to change about you. And Judah's been the same thing for me. He's been so gracious. I'm very much an introvert. I love people. I love socializing, but I wear out quickly. And yeah. Judah could socialize all night long. And it has taken us a while to realize, you know what? I can leave when I want to leave, and Judah's not going to be disappointed at me for that. And we're going to be able to walk in those differences.
And you're not going to feel bad. I mean, that's where it's partially accepting who you are in that regard as well, feeling comfortable with, I'm not going to feel like a failure, that I'm letting Judah down, that I'm letting these people down. I can be okay with, this is how God made me, and it's time to step away. Well, Christina go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, are you and Christina, are you opposite on introvert and extrovert?
We are both different levels of extrovert. I would say I have probably more capacity than she does, but she's still an extrovert. But we still, I mean, she's very much a have a plan, dial. I'll never forget, and this was like the eye-opening moment of early marriage, where one Saturday morning, the definition for me, and I've gotten better at this the longer I've been a leader and whatnot, but I love flying by the seat of my pants. And, you know, the longer you've been a leader, the more you got to have things a little bit more planned. But I remember on a Saturday morning, we wake up, it's sunny outside, the sun's coming through the window. I'm thinking, it's Saturday. We just can do whatever we want. That's the essence to me of a good Saturday. There is no, and her first question, we have not even gotten out of bed yet. And her first question is, she looks at me and she goes, so what do you think the plan is for the day? And just her asking about a plan produced this visceral, like, oh my gosh, I just feel like my Saturday got wrecked. And it's funny. Now, are we beyond that? Sure, we are beyond that now. But when it comes to traveling, for example, she likes to be super locked down, get there early to everything, all those. And I'm like a lot more chill. And so we still have to navigate the differences. And I appreciate that we don't miss flights because Christina makes sure that we're at places on time, but she's also managed to maybe just ease up a little bit on the schedule thing. So that's how it works out for us. I don't know.
So have you gotten to the point where you just go to the airport at different times and say, I'll see you at the gate? Have you ever done that yet?
We're not to the point yet. Have you guys done that?
For sure.
Oh man, that's a hack right there.
Right. There you go. Just, I'll take an Uber. I'll get there when I get there. And I don't want the stress. So I'll see you at the gate. There you go.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to file that away. The moment we get done with this conversation, I'm going to let Christina know I've got a new solution to our travel differences. That's so good. You guys have been married. How many years now have you been married?
We're 26, 1st of November. So
26. Okay, cool. So at least for us, there are some ways, and part of life is patterns and routines. I mean, there are just certain things that you keep doing day after day, and it is what it is. How, after 26 years of marriage, have you guys kept it fresh? And maybe those strategies look different depending on the season. I don't know, but how have you kept it where it's like, hey, we're not just doing the same thing where we get up and then we go to work and then we come home and then we, you know, have our dinner and then we watch a show or this week, and it's just this kind of like, you know, play and hit, copy and repeat thing, copy and paste thing. Yeah. How do you keep it fresh?
Oh gosh, I've got to be honest. I still fantasize about living a life of routine and the same day being like the other. Our life is so spontaneous that, and that actually isn't something that we've really had to ever be intentional about. We have had to be intentional with the flip side, which is, hey, we need to make sure that we do have these routines and that we're patterns that are holding us down. And I realize most people have the very opposite issue that we do, but we have walked through enough couples to know that is a fight and that is something that just needs to be done. How have you, since I don't have a great answer for that question, how have you guys done that?
Yeah, I think once in a while we'll discern that we've been just kind of doing the same thing, whatever it is. And so then we just literally say just anything we can do to mix it up. I mean, if we've been doing the same routine at night, we'll say, hey, let's go take a walk or let's do something that just deviates from the pattern. So I don't know if we have a great answer other than to sense sense when there is a little bit of a routine or a rut, and then try to figure out a way to mix it up. And it doesn't have to be like you're turning your whole life upside down. I do think, and readers can check this out in the book. I mean, you do talk about the idea of with sexual intimacy, keeping that area or that sphere of life fresh. And so you've got a whole week, kind of a whole chapter on what that looks like. Feel free to say as much or as little about that, because I want people to read the book. So you're going to get some great info in the book. But that is an area, maybe not on the schedule side of things, but on the intimacy side of things, it has sounds like you guys have been intentional on just kind of reinventing.
Absolutely. And I do feel like that is something that, as you mentioned, there is such a benefit to having the same partner for 25 years. You know each other, you understand each other, you don't have to necessarily communicate over everything each time you have sex. The downside of that is you can just end up doing the same thing over and over and over again. And for us, that definitely has required some intention. And just, even if it starts with a conversation, and just love to give just listeners, just even this one topic, even if you just talk to your spouse and say, hey, what's one thing that you've been fantasizing over sexually that we could actually do together in the bedroom? And even just the guts to have that question after you guys have been doing the same thing for 10, 15, 20 years, to even just have that question. And it's wild. I don't know if you feel this way, how much vulnerability that conversation actually still takes. If, you know, one thing that I've been curious about that we haven't talked about or tried, or that we did early on, but that we haven't been doing so much lately, even if it's just having the courage to have that conversation, I guarantee one thought will come out that will get you out of that rut sexual, not even a rut, but just a routine. And the routine can be beautiful and wonderful, but it can also then just get a little boring. I don't think it has to be boring.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I think that conversations around sexual intimacy are for probably just about everybody. I don't know if it really even matters, you know, male or female. That's a vulnerable, vulnerable space. And so I agree, even if it's just trying to attempt to have an intentional conversation about it, that's going to take you into good places. I do think, and I can't remember, and it strikes me, you must have covered this in the book, but I don't remember it right away, is so much of good sexual intimacy for us stems out of good emotional intimacy. And so while on the one hand, you know, I agree with you, you don't want it to be like, we won't do this until we'll do that, kind of a, you know, bargaining thing. Yep. I just think that those times, back to actually listening well, asking good questions in general, and you have a whole chapter on just what it means to listen well. And I for both of us, and it's, I think when we feel like we're heard and we're connected at an emotional level, I do think that really helps on a physical level and all other levels. Anything you want to say about just more than just digging in on questions about conflict, or you've got an issue I see, but I don't want to just accuse you of it. just that emotional connection.
Yes. I think having in mind that goal of knowing if I can be fully known and seen and loved, to have that, there is this person who knows me, who knows the good and bad, the ugly about me, who has seen me, who has seen my insecurities and my wildest dreams, and knows how I felt about that event. And to think that I can have that with somebody, to be fully known and fully seen and still loved. Mm-hmm. Obviously the goal, that's what we have with God. But when we can get glimpses of that with one other person on this planet, and that is our spouse, there is a freedom and a fulfillment to that that I think nothing else on this planet can actually offer. And, you know, the Bible talks about that we are made up of a spirit and a soul and a body. We're physical beings. Our soul is our emotions and our mind. And then there's this mysterious spirit that makes up who we are, that the Bible references and talks about. And I really do believe that there is a level of intimacy that is physical, it is emotional, but it's also spiritual. Having spiritual conversations with your spouse, praying together, being intentional with having intimacy on all three of those levels. I just do believe there is a reward that is on the other side of that is so inexplicable and hard to explain and understand. And I think that sometimes if people could just see that and know that and have that in mind, then those differences and those compromises and all the other things that we've talked about, it can be so worth it when you have this relationship that truly is mystical and magical and supernatural.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to. I've got one more question, but to land the conversation generally, because that language that you just used, there have been times where Christine and I have said, a good marriage where you're really connected, it just feels like it's just so supernatural and mystical and spiritual, and it the only thing that can compare is our relationship with God, and it's still two different things, but it's when you're in sync, that's what it's like, and it is an absolutely beautiful thing. I think that's a great word. Anything else, Chelsea, that you'd like to share before we end today?
Oh, great question. I would just love to give hope. You know, I think probably there's people listening to you and I talk and our decades long of marriage and doing date nights and vacations together. And people probably, some listening, feel very far away from that. Feel like that feels unattainable for me. Yeah. I don't feel like I can ever get there. It's too difficult. Too much has been happening. And I just want to give people a little hope and encouragement to say, I bet you're closer to that than you actually think you are. That you're still with somebody who you chose to stand up there in front of some level of family and friends and witnesses and say, I am choosing this person. And you chose them and they chose you. And as long as you're still in it, willing to fight, one of you, there is hope. And there's hope not just for a marriage that you can live through and endure and get through for the sake of your kids, but there is hope for a marriage that is full of joy and that has that mystical supernatural that we were even talking about, that it's not an exclusive venture just for super great people, that it actually is attainable and closer, I think, than people would realize.
Yeah, that's a great word. And I want to emphasize something kind of you said earlier on this point, because you're totally right. Pastorally, if someone's listening right now and they are facing an issue in their marriage that they just keep trying to get after, they're trying to have the conversations, it's not working. I want to encourage those listening, if there are times and places, and you already referenced this, to take a step to talk to someone who's in a marriage counselor and some kind of dynamic like that, bringing in somebody else to help you navigate an issue. I always say, if you keep tripping over the same bump in the carpet, you know, you need to maybe get some outside help in that. And you and Judah have done that. Christina and I have had people speak into our marriage. And so sometimes you need that third person that's going to help you get to the place that you want to go. So, hey, if people want to kind of follow, obviously the book's available everywhere. If people want to follow you and your work, how would they best do that?
Just Chelsea Smith on Instagram, Church Home one of the greatest things that we do that's not just for people in our community is daily guided prayers. And if couples are looking for a place to start, I'd say you can start there for free on our app on a website. It's 5 to 7 minutes that you can actually spend praying together or by yourself, wherever you start. So I just say, start there. It's a really great place to connect. Can I say one other thing when you just
for
mentioned?
Sure. Yeah.
Because there is often with counseling a lack of attainability with that of either financially or just, I don't know where to go to start to find a counselor. That is where I think, you know, you're a pastor, you lead a church. I think the church is such an incredible resource that even if you don't know where to start with a marriage counselor, start with an older couple in your church, ask to take them to coffee, and you would be surprised at how much just an older, wise couple can even help you. All it, you know, has to cost is a cup of coffee or even one that you make at home. But there are resources out there that aren't just professional marriage counselors, small groups, marriage groups in church.
That's a great point.
Absolutely phenomenal. So there are lots of options and places for people to go to and start and get that perspective.
I'm so glad you said that, because you're right. Counseling can be this big sort of seems formidable to take that step. And I remember reading years back a very, very, very famous Christian therapist who'd written a zillion books and all that. And he made the statement that if people had just conversations authentically with some other people in their church about what they're dealing with, he's like, honestly, he said, I think it was something like 90% of his practice, he said, would disappear overnight if they just had the kind of relationships where they sat down with somebody who's been married a little longer and could talk about what they're going through. So I think that's a great word. And I'm so excited for your book, Chelsea. I just feel like it's going to help marriage upon marriage, and not just those who are on the front end, but those who have been married for a long time, having good, productive conversations with their spouse, and then also being able to take some really good next steps and see growth in their marriage. So thank you for writing the book, and thank you for joining us today on Made to Advance.
Thank you for having me. I'm so grateful to be here. Hey, look for my resume for that discipleship pastor position. And
we'll add a third state to you and Judah's life.
I love it. All right, thanks. Thank you so much.
Yeah, take care. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Chelsea Smith, and I am so grateful for the book that she has available for all of us now on how we can grow in our marriage. And I love that she and Judah have been married this long and are still just enjoying all of the benefits of a healthy, flourishing marriage. And that can be for you too. So I want to encourage you, make sure you identify at least one next step you can take. Sometimes we get overwhelmed with, we hear all of these different things that we could be doing, that we should be doing. And I want to just encourage you, identify one next step. Maybe just take a moment to pray and say, Holy Spirit, is there anything you would call me to do to build into my marriage? And then take action on that one thing. That's how great marriages are built, not with these necessarily big revolutionary plans, but day by day, taking action steps to build healthier relationships. So if you have been encouraged by this conversation, please do rate and review our show. That's such an encouragement to our team. This has been a production of Engedi Church, and we've got more incredible conversations on the way. And so until next time, just know God made you to advance.